Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and co-founder of Scaler Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe, folk, that to truly scale your fintech, you have to have the ability and also the prowess to move across borders. And here to talk to us about that today is none other than Patrick. Patrick is the CEO and co-founder of October and also has been working in the financial industry for a number of years, has held senior positions at the likes of Goldman, JP Morgan, and also Deutsche. So very excited to have you on the show today. Patrick, welcome.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on your show, Richard.
Brilliant. And folks, as always, I'd like to give you a bit of a prelude, a deep dive into where we're going to be going today. And you know, I've been thinking about this over the last few days as this session was coming up. And I feel that what sort of sets startups apart from other companies is their infinite scalability, right? It's their ability to serve 10 customers or 10 million customers with the same amount of resources. Well, obviously, that hockey stick growth is something that we all look for. Startups, you know, generally will inevitably run into some snags, right? How do you actually maintain that scalability? And more often than not, this leads to founders, CEOs, executives, investors focusing on key zones. And one of those key zones is international expansion, right? Because very often you have to look across borders to find exponential growth. However, cross-border activities come with their own challenges, but also, folks, their own opportunities. And you know, to bring Patrick into the conversation, you know, I think let's start off at a place where I think is most prevalent to start off with, especially in Europe right now. And it's all about market access. And I know you guys have been growing building and growing over the past few years. And in that time, you know, the business environment has changed. So it'd be good to understand from your point of view, Patrick, how has the regulatory environment in Europe and also the advent of or the uprise of Brexit, how has that affected your expansion and, you know, your ability to be able to passport through different EU states?
The way we saw it when we started was that the regulation and the fragmentation in the market was an opportunity for us. Because if you look at some business models, maybe e-commerce, maybe social platforms, etc., there is little reason why a company that is based in California or in New York or in London could not take the whole thing, right? I mean, it's effectively one big pie and the biggest company is going to eat most of it. When you go to fintechs, it starts to be different because you have to comply with local regulations. And those regulations can be fairly easy to comply with. So if I'm thinking about payments, you can have one license and use that across Europe. Asset management, it's the same. But for what we're doing, which is financing companies, the regulations are actually very local still. And so we actually thought that was a good thing because when we launched October in 2014 with Olivier, you already had Funding Circle in the UK, you already had OnDeck in the US, and those guys had resources in terms of capital to grow. They had resources in terms of capital to lend as well. And it would have made no sense for us to launch a company if we didn't think that that fragmentation created in the market by regulation was not giving us some pools where we could start and develop our activity. And so that's how we started. So every country where we started, we had to get a new license or comply with the local regulation. In some countries, it was quite easy. Like, you know, for France, it took us a couple of months. In some, it was a lot harder. Like in Spain, which was the second market we opened, it took us a year and a half to actually have the right to start, which was a bit scary, frankly. I mean, I don't think we would have launched Spain if we had realized it would take that long initially, but it was a good lesson as well. After that, we opened Italy, we opened Germany, we opened the Netherlands, and now we've got that footprint in those five countries, which represent about 85% of Eurozone GDP. What's happening is that there is now a European regulation which is emerging, which is going to allow us to basically simplify our structure and expand to more countries in Europe. This is kind of perfect for us in a sense that regulation protected us at the start and allowed us to learn in each of these markets. And now that we've learned a lot in each market and established a position in most of them, which is reasonably preeminent, we're going to be able to simplify. Now, to be completely honest, I mean, the initial plan was to open the UK as well. And Brexit, I mean, threw a big spanner in the plan. And we decided not to go on the back of that because, you know, it would obviously have been a completely different framework to operate in.
So this is interesting. You were going into UK, but obviously altered course. With inside, you know, the countries that you obviously are operating in, I mean, there's this whole thing around talent. And also I can see it right now in the UK. Yeah. I'd say there's a lot of talent that has left and they've gone back to, you know, their neighbor or their home countries, France, Spain, Holland, etc. So obviously with the uprise of Brexit in the UK, there's been a bit of a, well, there's a challenging time for the UK right now, but have you seen it as a, from a business perspective, as, you know, from a business and talent perspective, as something of an opportunity that you can jump on because you're in these sort of neighboring countries and because it's not as easy to get visas in the UK. So this talent is now located in a way locally for you guys right now, right?
We see a little bit of that, but it's not... I don't think it's driving yet our ability to recruit. One of the things, though, that we decided early on is the company is based in Paris. That's our headquarter. Is that we didn't want to have all the central functions done from Paris. We wanted to use those great markets that we were entering and the talent that's in there in order to build really important functions, but not in France. So an example is our data team is in Amsterdam. The person responsible for the management of our retail lenders, for example, is also in Amsterdam. In Madrid, where I am today, we have the person who's in charge of all the success on the SaaS product that we're offering, where the technology we develop, we now sell it to banks and to asset managers. You know, that's based here. And so this ability when you're looking for somebody to tell them, and I guess we'll talk about, you know, remote and hybrid work and all this thing, but to hire them in an office where we have got a team locally, you know, in a nice location, and they can choose and they can move as well. We've got people who move between offices. And that's, I think, a real plus. Having said that, in none of those markets yet do we see the kind of the nexus of talent that you still have in the UK and particularly in London is still something that is amazingly advantageous for companies who launch there. Of course, they come at a very high price too, but that's a different topic.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, as part of obviously going into these markets, you have to, you know, going into Spain, going into Italy, into the Netherlands and Amsterdam, there is a hiring strategy, there is a training strategy, there is a retaining strategy, because all these folks, although they have certain skills, maybe it's in data, maybe it's in sales, but you know they have a specialized skill in the fact that they actually understand the culture, they understand the people. They've lived and breathed there for almost probably a number of years, if not all their life. So in this case, I mean, you know, what methods have you used to make certain that you hire, retain, and also train those specialized folk and keep them on board that journey that you're on?
I'd like to be able to say we have a strategy and we have a method and everything's worked to plan. But the reality is we tried, you know, a lot of different things. We always thought the most important hire, the one we could not get wrong, was the local CEO in the country. We were always very clear that if we didn't find the right person, it was better not to launch the country. A good example of this is, I think, Germany. We didn't launch until we were able to bring Thorsten Sieger on board, because very early on, we thought he would be the right guy to do it, but he was unavailable because he was running Funding Circle in Germany. That approach to hiring the CEO and then giving them the freedom to build a team locally, as you say, with the local knowledge. A lot of what we do is locally specialized, like the credit analysts, the operations people, the people who do the recovery on the loans. They need to have good knowledge of what's happening locally. And for salespeople, it's even more true. I mean, they need to have the network with the partners and et cetera. So that's, you know, hiring people of a certain caliber and giving them the freedom to experiment, which means making their own mistakes as well, right? As long as we learn from them, we're perfectly fine with that. And so the approach has been quite different in different countries. I mean, we used, you know, obviously headhunters extensively in some of the countries. In some others, the network was enough to actually find the right people and build a team. There's no strategy and there's no method there into the hiring. We do whatever works. But then the question you're asking about motivation and retention is something that we've asked ourselves very early on. Because we were giving a lot of freedom to the local CEOs, of course, the concern was to have five different companies, right? Five different countries, five different CEOs, five different companies. And so how we shared the culture and the values amongst all people was something that maybe we had to address a bit earlier than if we had not gone international. And so we did an exercise in building the values that we would agree on with all the company. And we did a lot of work on how we would make sure that those values were lived instead of just, you know, put on the wall, which was certainly my experience as many of my past employers. And it's sometimes small things like, we use Slack as a messaging system, and, you know, we created emojis corresponding to the values, and when somebody posts something which is linked to that value, or we think actually reflects that value, you know, like putting the customer first or working hard together, and etc., we all use that emoji as a kind of recognition that, okay, the person actually behaved according to the value. And that created a kind of common set of behaviors and etc., which, without taking away the freedom to experiment, make sure that in each country, October is October. Nice. Towards the customers, whether they are borrowers or lenders or investors, institutional investors, or even the regulator.
Nice. I like this. And I'm going to pick up on a couple of things. First, for those people that don't live in Europe or the UK and Ireland and are thinking, you know, that they want to come to the UK and Ireland and also into Europe and are thinking of a strategy, I think maybe you weren't fail on yourself when you said we didn't have a strategy, because for me it sounded like you did have a strategy. Your strategy was very clear. It took a long time to implement, but you're looking for that person, that local person with no local knowledge, that head of the business, that CEO, to really set it up, and then from there give them the accountability and responsibility to go off and really start implementing, right? And that's
and incarnating the project, right? Yeah. In front of the team locally, and also in front of the media. And the, you know, October in Spain is Grégoire Nolestapis. October in France is, you know, Olivier Goua. October in Germany is Thorsten Sieger. And of course, there are risks to that approach. But for us, we've seen that what each of these persons adds to the company goes way beyond their contribution to just the country. Because of course, the biggest downside for a startup when you go international so early as we did is dissipation of the resources, right, that you have. And that can be money, that can be time, focus. So yeah, getting the right person there solves a lot of those.
And you can build from there. So then folks that are listening to this, think about that. It's not a case, maybe it's not a case of shipping over, you know, the current CEO or the current COO or someone in the current organization. It's looking for that person that you can collaborate with, you can partner with, and, you know, being patient in that. I mean, you mentioned that it took you a while to get this up and running, and obviously it's paying dividends now because you guys are doing really well. So yeah, that is a strategy. The other thing is with regards to values. I mean, I always like to say to my clients that, you know, you have to, you know, values are something that you live and breathe. But, you know, if you break it down, there's maybe, you know, three things that, you know, I always talk about. One is One is leadership. You have to have strong and empathetic leadership. The next is relationships. You need to be able to build relationships, and not just internally, but externally, and continue to build on those relationships. And the last is making certain you have the company has the ability to continuously communicate internally and externally. And what I find is that if these three are sort of high up on a scale of 1 to 10, they 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10, a lot of good is happening. You're moving forward all the time. If one of them is out of kilter, for example, let's say communication, there's going to be issues, right? And there's going to be stuff to solve. So it's taking a look at that and making certain you're continuously evolving forward in your values.
And especially on the communications issue, more than a cause of things going wrong, very often I think it can be a symptom. Because I think we're all super keen on posting on LinkedIn when stuff goes well, right? But when they're more difficult, it's harder. And that was one thing that we, so far, are really committed to, is we've, part of what we do is a risk business. We take risk. And when you take risk, sometimes you lose money. And people usually don't brag about the fact they lose money. So we don't brag about it. But we communicate transparently about it. And more on a personal level, when my co-founder Olivier was diagnosed with, you know, a terrible disease, I think many people would just have hidden that as long as they could. And he decided, and I fully supported him in his decision, to communicate on that. And, you know, transparency is easy when things go well. But if you're really committed to it, you are. And that pays off. I mean, in my experience, it pays off in many ways. It pays off humanly, on the impact on the team, on the impact of how people perceive you outside, the trust that you build. Yeah, I mean, people discount those bragging posts on LinkedIn, right? I mean, we're all used to that. But if you show real transparency and honesty, then I think it makes a difference.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
Let's stay on that for a second, because you mentioned transparency and honesty. And how has this helped you guys on your journey? Just being able to do that, being able to live and breathe that in a day in, day out basis.
Yeah, I think the way we do that and we commit to that is with the alignment of interest that we create between us and all the types of investors that we have that come and lend on the platform. So we have retail lenders. We have more than 40,000 people across Europe who actively lend on the platform to companies in Spain, or, you know, in France, Germany, Italy, et cetera, and the Netherlands. And we have institutional investors. You know, we have big insurance companies, big institutionals. And the third class is ourselves. So, you know, we commit money on every single loan that goes on the platform. And there's a huge amount of benefits that flow from that approach. But first of all, because we are retail lenders, we have to be completely transparent about the performance. We display all our stats, all our portfolio is freely accessible on the platform. When somebody doesn't pay us back, we can't hide it even if we wanted to, because those retail lenders, if they don't get their money, will ask where it's gone. Yeah. So, you know, they're keeping us to the commitment to transparency that we made. And the institutional investors value that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they understand that this transparency that we're forced to obey and the alignment of interest that we've created with this plays in their favor. It prevents the kind of tendency that you can have on the platform to just try to ramp up your volume at the expense of you know, taking too much risk. I mean, it basically keeps us honest, and they see that. So that's definitely helped us convince investors like Allianz or the European Investment Fund to fund loans on the platform, even though we were quite a young company when they did it.
Nice. I like it. And you've also alluded to your structure and how the structure sort of started changing as you went into different geographic locations with inside Europe. And from your seat as, you know, the CEO and co-founder, what has been the two or three things that you thought helped you build out that structure and also made the shift into that new world, into Germany, into Spain, et cetera, reality, and something that you could actually understand and action on if maybe there was an issue with something?
there's a technical aspect to this. If you start building your company and you know day one that you're going to go international, you build things in a different way. Okay, so that's you know, something that our CTO, Benjamin Metteur at the time, and our Julien Guépin have always had in mind. And that's, you know, we have one platform, and it's the same platform in all the countries. And you know, it's multilingual, it's, you know, it deals with all the regulations in all the countries, but it's the same app running. That's a big, big thing. The other aspect is, you know, I mentioned the culture and the enrichment and really allowing the specificities of the local market to impact the decision that you make in terms of development. It's not always easy, right? Because you don't know what's going to work. You have limited resources again. So that kind of arbitrage creates frustration. But a lot of what we've done over the last couple of years has been driven by the developments we've made in Italy or in the Netherlands. And that's, you know, benefiting the whole company. And the third aspect is more cultural, because we launched France. We did our first loan in 2015. The first loan that we made was 60,000 euros. And we took more than a week to close it. And I think we had about 100 lenders on them. And frankly, I knew them all, right? I mean, they were all in my address book or in Olivier's address book. And we, you know, kind of friends and family kind of thing. And then 2 years later, when we opened Spain, we had no idea whether at the time, I think the 6,000 French lenders that we had onboarded would be interested in financing a company in Spain. You know, it was literally an open question because nobody had done that before. And so we put that first project online in Spain, and I think it was 300,000 euros. And it was financed in just a few hours by, I think, 1,500 people, most of them French lenders. That was the day that, you know, we thought, okay, building this thing at a European level is going to, you know, we're going to have synergies. We're going to be able to use the same type of funding. We're going to be able to, and you know, it's still today, I mean, one of the things that we're proudest of, that we've kind of created this Europe of savings from the ground up at our small level instead of being like a big thing driven, you know, at the political level. So that's, you know, we still get a kick out of that.
Awesome.
Every time that happens.
I love that story. A brilliant story. And as we wrap up this part of the show, we head into the flash round. You know, what message or what bit of advice would you give to those fintechs that are out there that are preparing to expand cross borders into the EU? What are the three things, the three nuggets of wisdom you'd like to give them right now?
Well, first of all, I'm always a bit cautious of giving advice because I don't know what we've learned, if it's always applicable to other people. But in line with what we're saying before is get that first hire right. And if you have to wait for that, it's really, really, really not a big deal. The second thing is be very open as well with those people about the kind of influence you're going to be able to have in the company. I think one of the things that is important if you hire somebody who's you know, a really great person and who wants to be involved and wants to do a lot of things, if you confine them to that country where they're operating, you're not going to be able to exploit all their talents, right? And it's frustrating for them, and it's just a waste. If you can try to find ways where you make the most of those different things, I think that's going to be super useful. And the last is more cautionary. Is we tend to think that because we can communicate and speak kind of the same language with English and whatever, we're all the same, but it is not true. I mean, you know, the Dutch, and God knows how much I love our team in Holland, but it's very different from a cultural perspective. From, you know, the French culture and same thing in Spain, same thing in Italy and Germany. And you have to respect it and let it enrich you, but it's not always easy to make it work. No. Mostly we do. Sometimes we don't.
Brilliant. No, really, really great bits of wisdom. And you know, now we head into the flash round. And folks out there, you know, I'm looking for a drum a drum, because I need to intro the flash round a bit better. But right now, so if you do have a drum, you know, send it over to me, drop me a note, DM me. I've been looking for one for the last 3 weeks and only a couple of people have said, Richard, I've got one. So I need more options. So here we go, drum roll. Okay, flash round, a bit more fun at the end of the show. So what is it? I ask Patrick three quick fire questions, and then I turn over the mic and he is allowed to ask me one. And you ready, Patrick?
Good to me. Yeah, let's go.
Okay, let's go. Okay. Web3,
Is it a myth or reality?
Okay, so I'm a bit concerned by what I feel like the small percentage of what's happening in Web3, which is actually constructive and helpful. The bit which is constructive and helpful, frankly, I love and I think it's fantastic. But there's so much other things happening as well, which are extremely destructive, which, you know, I'm not entirely convinced that it's going to work out the way we hope. But it would be a fantastic development for many types of activity. I mean, if you look at what we're doing, we're decentralizing finance in a way. It's not going through the banks. So we obviously have sympathy for that movement. But, you know, a lot of things happening in there which are basically insane and should not happen, in my not so humble opinion, I guess.
I hear you there. And listen, no right or wrong answers here. So, we value your opinion. Next one, is remote and or hybrid working here to stay for the future?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I live in London. The company is based in Paris. We have offices in different countries, as you know. We've been very open for certain types of roles to having people being full remote. And, a couple of weeks ago, we onboarded a guy from Brazil who's based in Lourdes, which is a very small town in the southwest of France. He's a developer. I think that's fantastic. I mean, being able to have those profiles is really good. But at the same time, a company is a company. You know, it's a group of people. And if you don't want to spend time with that group of people with whom you work, I mean, it's not about friendship so much, et cetera, but the energy that comes with being with people is precious. And I know, I feed on that and many people feed on that. So getting the balance right, you know, is going to take many years. It can be different answers for different companies. Of course, yes, definitely hybrid is a big plus. We love it. And it's here to stay.
Cool. And last one, I mentioned this might be the trickiest one, but let's see. Best city in the world, London or Paris?
Oh, well, I'm going to have to say London.
That's a shock. Yeah. Okay, there we go.
Well, you know, I've lived there now for 23 years. That's where I built my, you know, my family. And it's a lovely city. Don't get me wrong. Paris is a great city. And so much to do there. I've just, you know, made my life in London for a couple of decades now. So it matters.
Brilliant. I hear you there. And now I turn the mic over to you, my friend. And fire away. Any question you want?
Yeah, I mean, you strike me as a pretty methodical guy. And so I'm always curious about what are people learning. And sometimes for people, they're just learning by chance. For some people, it's organized. You know, they go through phases of 6 months of, okay, I'm going to be focusing on that. And I'm curious, what's your approach about?
Yeah, I like to learn. Firstly, I like to learn all the time. I'm just I'm a sucker for a good podcast. I'm a sucker for a good book, a good audio book right now. But actually, you know, I'm a people's people, right? I like going out there and talking to people. And so I've got a podcast. Right now, I mean, actually today, it's interesting you asked the question, but my daughter, who's only six and a bit years old, walked up to me today. Walked up to me today, gave me a hug before she left for school and said, "Daddy, have a good day. It's all going to be okay." I was like, okay, that came out of nowhere, right? So I was like, you know, that's cool. What is that? That's just being empathetic, understanding where people are at certain points. And I think if you grasp opportunities to learn from anyone in this world, then you're just going to grow every day. And that's how I approach it. I just want to go out there, have a book, or, you know, talk to people and just continue to learn. And that's what I like.
I love it. And, you know, my kids are a bit older, and kids are great teachers, tough teachers sometimes, but they're great teachers for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, as we wrap up the show, I always like to give the guests the opportunity to leave some details as to how listeners can contact you and folks in your business. So what's the best method for people out there to reach in?
Yeah, LinkedIn works great. I don't check the messages every single day, but you'll get an answer. Hopefully the conference circuit is going to stay open, and I'll run into some of your listeners in one of these events in the next few months.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, listen, thanks for coming on the show today. Really excited for your future and October's future. And yeah, looking forward to seeing you guys continue to scale cross borders.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.